Shalom everyone and good evening from Connecting Galilee. I'm Amir Tsarfati and this is a special update on the war between Israel and Iran, or may I say the end of the war between Israel and Iran, a war that lasted exactly 12 days with the craziest 72 hours since the night between Saturday and Sunday all the way until today. Unbelievable roller coaster of events, starting with the U.S. decoy operation that eventually led to a U.S. strike on the three most important nuclear sites of Iran. And then, of course, came the Iranian response last night in Qatar. And, of course, the surprising, very quick announcement of President Trump that there is going to be a ceasefire that starts at 7 a.m. this morning, Israel time. Of course, there was a violation. Of course, Israel responded. A lot has happened, but now everything is calm. And it seems to me that this ceasefire is going to hold and that the other side is very much deterred. Let's pray and start with this special update. Father, I thank you for who you are, the protector and the shield for your people Israel. He who keepeth Israel neither slumbers nor sleep. You are the Holy One of Israel. You are the guard of Israel. You are the shield of Israel. You set your guarding angel over your nation, your people. So we thank you and we bless you that we've seen miraculous 12 days in which we were able to fight the most bitter enemy that we have in this region and overpower them quite decisively and quickly. We thank you for amazing intervention from above, as most of the nation can witness. We thank you again in Yeshua's name. Amen. So again, everyone, shalom. I'm Amir Tsarfati. This is an out of the ordinary special update about the end of the war between Israel and Iran, the 12 days war, the Rising Lion operation that began with a surprise preemptive strike that took the Iranians by surprise in the first 10 minutes, eliminated the top nuclear scientists, the top brass of all of the four arms of the military of Iran, as well as the destruction of the air defense system and the ready-to-launch long-range ballistic missiles. And once we did that, Israel was working very hard within 48 hours to dominate the skies of Western Iran and the skies of the capital, Tehran. And then, of course, came the obliteration of almost everything that Iran was storing, was working, was building, and was developing in order to destroy Israel. Make no mistake, folks, Israel unveiled while we were finding things in Gaza, in the tunnels of Gaza, we found so many papers and correspondence between the Iranian operators and their the handlers of the Hamas from Iran. Apparently, not only that October 7th was heavily funded by the Iran, and we'll talk about that in a second, but we also found that there is another plan that by 2027, Iran should once again deploy an amazing strike simultaneously from all around using thousands of ballistic missiles, drones, and cruise missiles, and to overwhelm the Israeli air defense and to strike the Israeli home front, and then, of course, do what they know to do, to kill Jewish people. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to talk about the whole war. We've covered a lot, but I want to talk about the last 72 hours. But before we do that, I have to remind you that there were specific goals that the Israeli government put in front of it for this war. There are, in fact, four goals of this war with Iran. The first one is significant damage to the nuclear program. significant damage to the nuclear program. And in fact, what we see as of today, it's not just significant, it's complete obliteration and destruction of the nuclear program. And by the way, to those of you who are afraid, it seems like most of the enriched uranium is actually under the ground, still in that Fordow, and nobody can reach it. It's buried under the ground, and it's destroyed with the entire underground facility. The second goal, and that's, we felt that very vividly, is a significant damage to the missile program. Iran was racing towards production line of 300 missiles per month that will bring Iran to 3,600 per year. And I don't need to tell you what a damage of a ballistic missile that is a Mach 6 to Mach 8 speed, and it has half a ton to 2 tons of explosive. It's very destructive. The blast itself can literally shatter the windows and the front of buildings in 2 to 3 blocks away from you. So we're talking about their plan, and we're talking about what we did, and I'll expand on it in a few seconds. The third one is attacking the Shiite axis, is making sure that the Shiite militias are also overpowered. So it's obviously Hezbollah, the militias also in Syria and Iraq, as well as the Houthis that are also getting pounded. And believe it or not, the Houthis managed throughout those 12 days to fire only 2 ballistic missiles. So that is something quite amazing. Netanyahu was working in a linear way, where he first struck Hamas, and then he moved to Hezbollah, then he moved to topple the Assad regime by overpowering Hezbollah, and then, of course, destroyed all of the Assad regime military power and caused all of the Iranian militias to leave Syria and go under the ground in Iraq. And then, after Netanyahu sent those F-35s to destroy the radar systems and the anti-aircraft systems around the nuclear facilities earlier in April and in October, then the road to Iran was wide open, and then we could deal with Big Satan. Now, the fourth objective, the goal of this war, was creating the conditions for the long-term thwarting of the nuclear and missile program through diplomatic means, which means it means that we are striving for a deal, for an agreement that will allow inspection and verification that there is no nuclear program and their ballistic missile program is also no longer there. And if I may say, Israel is working very hard in the last 48 hours to destabilize the government institutions there, talking about prisons, talking about government buildings, talking about the broadcast authority that was a big symbol of propaganda that people hated, and talking about the police, the Basij that the Iranians created to basically control the people inside Iran. And so we're talking about significant damage that we did that. And as you can see, out of the 4 goals, the change of the regime is not there. There is no change of regime. There's no toppling the regime. There is no killing of Khamenei. Not that we would shed a tear if Khamenei was dead, but it wasn't part of the 4 goals of the Israeli government for this Rising Lion operation. And if you're asking me why, it's because normally toppling a regime should come from the inside, should be done by the people of that country. We could assist by shaking the ground from underneath the feet of the government, inflicting upon them losses, humiliation, and a lot of damage. But in essence, I don't think the Iranian people want to be seen as those that were getting directives from the Israeli government. And I also think that these events of toppling regimes, and it happened in Egypt, and it happened in Syria, normally come from within, from the people of the country. I believe that the snowball may have started, but I'm not convinced it's going to end with the toppling of the regime before the next war. And so we're left now with a regime that is still there in power, much weaker and very embarrassed, very bruised and eager to have revenge. And that is exactly, and that's the key, because you have to remember, I've told you that many, many times, Iran found out that its proxies will not help it. Iran found out that it's much weaker than it thought. Iran found out that Israel within 3 days could dominate its skies. Can you imagine a country is dominating your skies? Think about it for a second. If you're an American and China dominates the skies of America, if you're European and Russia is dominating your skies all over Western Europe and it can bomb anything and everything, think about it. That's what Israel did in Iraq, Iran, only we did not just bomb civilians, we bombed targets, government targets and military targets. And trust me, there were a lot, especially over the last 72 hours, we did an amazing job. And if you're following me on Telegram, and that's the QR code, you can clearly see names after names of generals and brigadier generals and scientists that we managed to thwart from this, you know, big plan of to destroy Israel. Now you have to understand, folks, Iran was built on a big lie, deception. They do have capabilities, but more than that, they had a propaganda machine that broadcasted to the world that they are much bigger and stronger than they really were. And all the countries around them trembled. Europe trembled. Even America trembled and ran for an irresponsible nuclear deal that would allow them to have a bomb probably by now. And so all it took is for someone to call the bluff, someone to actually dare to go all the way and hit them hard in their soft belly over there, and that's it. And folks, much of it happened in the first 20 minutes of Operation Rising Lion. And the more I hear from people that I know, some of them are family, some of them are friends, some of them are people in high places that I know, there was unbelievable divine intervention in the very beginning of this war and throughout the entire war. Divine intervention in so many levels. First of all, Israel wanted to surprise the Iranians. Unfortunately, while our F-35s, F-15s, and F-16s took off, some friends of Israel and some people within Israel, irresponsible people, leaked that Israel is on its way. And remember, the pilots had coordinates and they had targets to surprise some of these key people in their bedrooms. Some of them, when they heard that Israel is sending fighter jets, left their homes and went to their military bunkers. The reason why I'm saying that there is a divine intervention is okay, we lost the first target, but actually he led us to a bigger target where we eliminated him and all of these people at the same time. So in one bomb, we actually killed more people that are responsible for the plan to destroy Israel. So again, one thing after another. Another thing is that Mossad operators were able to defuse and thwart a huge barrage of ballistic missiles that was supposed to be launched upon the Israeli strike. And I'm talking about anything between 500 to 1,000 ballistic missiles were supposed to be launched on the very first hour from Iran. And it took them hours until they managed to send 100 ballistic missiles. And in fact, throughout the entire 12 days, they sent 500 missiles. And something that they were planning on sending in the first 10 minutes. Israel managed to destroy 65% of all the launchers on the ground and more than half of all the ballistic missile stockpile from over 2,500. They're left with 1,000 ballistic missiles and with about 120 launchers. Now, you're probably going to say, wait a minute, Amir, now they can launch rockets. Of course, they can, but the one big thing that we destroyed is all of their facilities where they manufacture and assemble the ballistic missiles. In other words, they can no longer manufacture ballistic missiles, which means they do have 1,000, but they cannot have more than that, at least for the foreseeable future. So I'm not sure they want to launch them because they're going to be left without anything. They don't even have enough launchers. Israel dominated the skies of Iran. That means that we were able to catch them wherever they are. And in many cases, barrages that were supposed to be 50 or 60 rockets were actually decreased to 5 to 10 because we managed to thwart 2/3 of the launchers before the rockets actually took off. Now, if that's not enough, folks, Israel also managed to attack big facilities where they make explosives, big facilities where they make parts for the engines of the rockets, big facilities where they have research centers for the bomb. And when you destroy and kill their top 15 scientists, you also took away the knowledge that they had in order to put together a bomb. You probably don't know that, but ever since Israel killed Nasrallah, toppled Nasrallah, and Assad regime was toppled, and Iran basically lost all of its proxies power, this is when Iran accelerated its effort to produce missiles and to put together 10 to 15 nuclear bombs. So Israel, the moment Assad fell, Israel knew we have borrowed time. This is exactly why we needed to do what we did. Now, also, I want you to know in Israel's most conservative estimation, we were supposed to get anything from 500 to 1,000 rockets in the first day. We were supposed to have around 400 to 500 casualties, and towers in Tel Aviv were supposed to fall and collapse. In reality, only 8 ballistic missiles hit buildings and killed people. Only 8. Out of the 500, 80 to 90% were actually intercepted, which is amazing. And as you know by now, 28 Israeli civilians and one Israeli soldier. In fact, the soldier was at home. He wasn't in the base. He was killed actually this morning in Beersheba, him and his girlfriend. Both of them were 18 years old. All of that happened. And so again, we were supposed to have so many bad things, but in reality, basically 95% of the estimations of damage were actually proved wrong. Yes, buildings were hit, as you can see on the screen right now. This is from this morning in Beersheba in the last barrage. Oh, this is one rocket that managed to kill 4 Israeli civilians this morning. But I do want you to know, folks, that this is a resounding success of Israel, a victory that will be learned in military schools and military academies many years. In 12 days, Israel managed to overpower, dominate, and destroy the capabilities of the biggest regional superpower in the Gulf and in the Middle East, as far as influence, such as Iran. Iran is weak, Iran is wounded, Iran is humiliated, and Iran was begging for a ceasefire. Israel agreed, but now I want to take you to the events of the last 72 hours. Because it was one thing after another, they led to the result of a sustainable ceasefire that we have right now. So it all started in the night between Saturday and Sunday, and I'll bring you now to the continent of the United States. So here we are, take a look at this map. So there is Iran and there is Israel over there, but over there in America, as you can see, there was a decoy operation that started with two air bases, one in Missouri and one in, and the other one is, of course, in, I think it was Oklahoma, exactly. And from Missouri, we had the B-2s, and from Oklahoma, we had the KC-135 tankers, fueling tankers. They took off westwards towards Guam, and they did not even hide their call signs, only to make everybody think that America will attack in a few days. And while they were flying, and while America confirmed that they are about to land in Guam, but America said they don't have any plans to attack yet, at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, seven B-2s with KC-35s took off eastwards, and they were on the mission, the real mission, to destroy Iran's nuclear power. Now, they followed the path that Israel already created, and they came all the way, and they dropped 12 GBU-57 30,000-pound bombs. They dropped them on Fordo. On Isfahan, on Natanz, they dropped two, and U.S. submarines actually shot cruise missiles towards Isfahan. These are the GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrator. Again, six penetration holes were seen in Fordo, so two in each managed to penetrate all the way and destroy Fordo completely. Natanz received two of them, and Isfahan received the cruise missiles that basically destroyed it completely. Ladies and gentlemen, it was a combined operation of not only the B-2s, which are bombers, but also F-22s, F-15s, F-35s, and of course, reconnaissance planes, and over 120 aircrafts took part in this whole thing. And if that's not enough, the U.S. Navy with submarines was there down in the Indian Ocean and the Arabian Sea and managed to send the cruise missiles that destroyed Isfahan. So all in all, ladies and gentlemen, America within 25 minutes managed to destroy on the ground what Israel began in Natanz and in Isfahan, but Israel left Fordo, the big fortified enrichment facility in the desert near Qom. Israel left that one for America. And now starts the amazing script. Now start the amazing show. It was evident that Iran would want to avenge this type of attack on its soil by the U.S. Now, you have to understand, Iran for the last 35 years has been working and pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into the nuclear program, and overnight it was gone. It started with Israeli attacks for days and then came to completion with a U.S. attack. So you have to understand, Iran is super angry, super humiliated. Now, it reminds me of January of 2020 when President Trump ordered the killing of Qasem Soleimani, who is the mastermind behind all the militias that Iran built around Israel to bring about the day of destruction over Israel on the command. Now, the reason why Qasem Soleimani was assassinated by U.S. forces was not because he was threatening Israel necessarily. And this is something Americans needs to know and the rest of the world needs to know. The U.S. did not bomb Iran's nuclear sites only because Israel was under threat. Let me share with you something that I found online. Honest Reporting wrote it. Why did the U.S. bomb Iran's nuclear sites? It started with a revolution and a different hostage crisis, if you remember 1979. The Ayatollah Khomeini overthrew Iran's pro-Western monarchy and founded the world's first Islamic Republic. He called America the Great Satan. America in 1979 turned as Great Satan in Israel, only the Little Satan. And that same year, ladies and gentlemen, his supporters stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and took 52 American hostages for 444 days. And from day one, his goal was clear: bring down the West. That's not enough, because what does Great Satan really mean? A lot of people are asking. Khomeini accused the U.S. of corrupting Iran with Western values, backing the Shah, the king, and stealing Iran's oil. He believed that America spread moral decay across the Muslim world and that Israel was an extension of that power. That ideology still guides the regime's foreign policy even until today. The Islamic Republic has been attacking the West for decades, make no mistake. In 1983, Iran-backed Hezbollah bombed the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut, and 241 Americans were killed with the funding of Iran, and it was done by the creation of Iran, Hezbollah. 1996, Iran-backed terrorist bomb Khovar Tower in Saudi Arabia, and 19 U.S. airmen were killed. That's Iran. 2011, Iranian agents plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C. on U.S. soil. 2024, Iran's proxies launched missiles at U.S. troops in Iraq and Syria and hit commercial ships in the Red Sea. 2024 to 2025, U.S. officials uncover Iranian plot to assassinate Donald Trump. The Islamic Republic, a ring of fire. It's not just about Israel. Iran invested billions in building a deadly network of terror proxies across the Middle East, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Gaza, which attacked, obviously, Americans as well, Houthis in Yemen that attacked U.S. ships as well, and Shiite militias in Iraq and Syria that attacked U.S. bases as well. Together, they form a ring of fire around Israel and target U.S. forces, embassies, and allies. And Qasem Soleimani was killed because he plotted to attack the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. Now, why did the U.S. bomb Iran's nuclear sites? The Iranian regime's global terror reach. Iran's proxy infrastructure doesn't stop at the ring of fire, ladies and gentlemen. They've spent years building terrorist sleeper cells across Europe, Africa, and South America, and may I say, even in continental United States. They established many of them there, and don't be surprised if you'll hear about them very soon. They're already ready to act the moment Tehran gives the order. And they will. They're humiliated. And now imagine that this regime had nuclear weapon. A state that sponsors global terror was about to have world's deadliest weapon. And it wouldn't just threaten Israel. It would basically blackmail the U.S. and also intimidate Europe, trigger regional arms race, and give cover for future proxy wars with nuclear protection. So it's not just about Israel, folks. A nuclear Iran would shake the foundations of global security, and the U.S. strike wasn't just about loyalty to an ally, it was about preventing a future no one can afford. And because bringing down the Great Satan is still the Islamic Republic's ultimate goal, it had to have been done. It's not just about Israel, and you have to remember that. This is not only about that. And I want you to know that those B-2s took off for a mission. It's the first time B-2 Spirit is actually attacking with the GBU-57s in a wartime. This has never happened before. This was a great exercise for the Americans. This is the footage of them taking off at midnight from Whiteman Base in Missouri, and the footage of their arrival after a successful mission 36 hours later, back in their base. Here it is, landing safely back home. Epic, beautiful, amazing, and perfect in precision and execution. Very well done. Now, if you think that this whole thing wasn't planned to details by America and Israel, you can kiss that thought goodbye. There was no way America could have done that without Israel preparing the way, preparing the corridor for them to enter in, disabling all the radars, disabling all the anti-aircraft batteries all around, and dominating the skies of not only Tehran but also all over Iran. And during those hours that the U.S. operated in the skies of Iran, Israel cleared its own aircraft and allowing America to do what it needs to do and leave. And then Israel came back to continue its operation. But what happened is that Iran was looking for a way to save face. It's a cultural thing. They cannot be perceived as a country that is totally defeated. After Qasem Soleimani's death or assassination, they asked America, please let us attack one of your bases so we can say that we did something in response. America cleared the base and they did attack, and that's it. The same thing happened yesterday, and President Trump even acknowledged that Iran alerted America and Qatar, and may I even say Israel, that it's about to launch 14 ballistic missiles towards Al Udeid base in Qatar. And what you see now on the screen is the interception of 13 out of the 14. They allowed one ballistic missile to fall in open space just to cause minor damage so the Iranians can say, we have completed our mission. You understand that? It's all about saving face. It's all about a show. It's all about pride. It's all about their honor. That's what it's all about. And you have to understand, this is the name of the game. They're selling their people propaganda even as we speak. Thousands of Iranians are out there in the streets celebrating their victory. Believe it or not, right now, they're celebrating victory after they've been obliterated throughout the day and throughout the night last night. Even look at this footage from last night. I mean, it was amazing. We literally last night destroyed more things within 3 hours than we destroyed over the last 7 days. Unbelievable. We destroyed headquarters, storage places for weapon, ammunition, research centers. We destroyed government offices. We destroyed so many things that belong to the regime. And that, all of that, and they're coming out to the streets and they celebrate victory. And may I even remind you, and it's important that you understand, Egypt in 1973, Egypt in 1973 was defeated by Israel. Yes, they surprised us on Yom Kippur, but Israel ended up in the gates of Cairo. And up until today, the Egyptians are celebrating the day of victory over Israel in October of every year, although they lost the war. Also Hamas, every time they ended up losing in another round, they would celebrate a victory. It's something that psychologists will one day have to analyze. It's a very unfortunate thing that they're selling their people delusions and propaganda, but that's how they managed to scare so many Arab countries around. And it's amazing. Even today, they said, we closed the Straits of Hormuz without even firing one shot. But they didn't close anything. In fact, they were threatened by China not to close. But there were some cargo ships that saw the rockets that they fired at Qatar, and they just turned around. But they didn't close anything. But you see, they're taking a situation and they're painting it as if they did it. And it's about them, it's about their might, and it's about their strength. And this is it, folks. Nobody's buying it anymore. Even in some polls that I see in Iranian Telegram channels, the majority of people say that Iran lost, for sure. Even their own people say that they lost. But remember, 40% of the Iranian population is Shiite. and the Iranian Islamic Republic wants to sell them victory. The Arab world is astonished at what Israel did in 12 days. In fact, the whole world is astonished. The whole world was paralyzed from fear because of Iran, and now they understand no more. There's no more threat of ballistic production of missiles, and there's no more threat of nuclear power that they have. And Iran will have to wait patiently until Trump is no longer there and until America is no longer a superpower that stands by Israel, and until Russia will be strong enough and take advantage of the situation and lead an attack on Israel. And that's when Persia is going to join, not alone, not relying on its proxies, but actually relying on a much stronger countries such as Russia and Turkey. And only then they will try to avenge their humiliation of June 2025. Unbelievable. Israel emerges out of this as a superpower in this entire region, and no one can deny that. No one. And I can tell you, folks, that although we would have loved to end up this war without the last four civilians killed and the one rocket that hit the building, but I will tell you that it's over. The Iranians, as always, tried to draw their own line, and 2 minutes after the ceasefire was over, they shot another barrage, but also 2.5 hours later, they shot another barrage. Israel vowed to retaliate. President Trump didn't want anything to escalate, and he asked Netanyahu, please make something small, just so this whole ceasefire is not going to collapse. So we destroyed a radar position there on the Caspian Sea, and then we came back, and that's it. The ceasefire is now in effect. Israel tomorrow will open up back to normal. Everything is going to be back to normal. People will go to school, go to work. The airport will gradually open. But things like that, as you can see on the screen, are still going to be found in places such as this. This one is one of those two rockets that actually flew towards Israel 2.5 or 3 hours after the ceasefire was already declared. That was a direct violation of the Iranians. President Trump was not happy this morning, accusing both Israel and Iran for violating the ceasefire, although Iran is the one who did it. But President Trump did not appreciate the pounding of Israel on Iran during the night, although it was before the ceasefire came into effect. But he saw that we obliterated. It was the most violent night that Iran has known throughout the war. And so he wasn't happy. But then, of course, he knew that things had to have been done that way. Then he said that, look, the Iranians sent those two missiles unintentionally. I don't know how can anyone launch two ballistic missiles unintentionally? I don't know. But again, he needed to exercise his ability to be still the mediator rather than to take a side. And one thing, he made it very clear, Iran will not have nuclear weapon or nuclear program. So this morning, as you can see, that last rocket hit the city of Beersheba. It's a very, very fast one and very destructive one, as you can clearly see. And this is how four civilians were killed. These were the last casualties of this 12 days long war. And may I remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that it's 28 civilians out of a very conservative estimate that there will be 400, if not 500, Israeli casualties in such a short war with Iran. So everything is miraculous. Our number of casualties, the number of rockets they managed to launch, the fact that we killed all of their scientists and all of their leaders, the fact that we destroyed 2/3 of the launchers, the fact that we dominated their skies, the fact that we had intelligence good enough to defuse their strike, and we destroyed thousands of ballistic missiles on the ground, the fact that we managed to destroy all of their factories to manufacture ballistic missiles. The fact that we were able to bring America not only to help us in defense, but also for the first time since 1941, America is assisting an ally in war, in attacking. The last time it did it, it was in World War II when America entered into the war after Pearl Harbor, if you remember. And since then, America never ever entered into a war for an ally. Israel paved the way. Israel had beautifully crafted a situation where America benefited from this whole thing, because if you really think about it, without the U.S. destruction of the nuclear program, the world will still be in big danger. But not only that, there will be no chance for any peace in the Middle East. And right now, everybody's expecting the Abraham Accords to expand and for Israel to obviously flourish. And if you're asking me, what about the poor Iranian people? I think that, it's up to them. They will have to do it themselves. Look, we can shake the building, but they need to give it the last push for it to collapse. You understand that throughout these 12 days, there was not a single uprising of any Iranians anywhere. Why? Because it's a time of war. And they don't want to be seen as some people who get directives from another country. But the day is coming and they might be able to do it. But I want you to know, not only that the Iranians are there to do it, hundreds of Mossad agents that their sole objective toward the nuclear program are now jobless because there is no more nuclear program. And I think they're going to get a new job to destabilize that regime so we can eventually somehow bring an end to it. Biblically, I want to remind you, Iran will join a war against Israel, join Russia, join Turkey, and later on Sudan and Libya will also join them in the attempt to destroy Israel. That's the Gog from the land of Magog war from Ezekiel 38. It will happen. It's not when. It's not if, but it's when, basically. And that's a lot of that is what I describe in my upcoming book, Exploring Ezekiel, that, if I may say, is more accurate than the news even today or even tomorrow. Exploring Ezekiel, my upcoming book, folks, we live in the days of Ezekiel, from the return of the Jews back to the land, the establishing of the country, the prosperity of Israel, the peace that is about to come, and of course, the war that will emerge from it. And a lot of people are asking me, because tomorrow I'm going to try and leave the country on my way to eventually start a long tour in America and in Canada and Alaska to cruise also. Many people are asking me, Amir, can you tell us where you're going to speak and when do you have a tour to Israel? All of this information, including ways to help our ministry, all of that appears on our website. I want to remind you, beholdisrael.org. You see, everything is in the website. You'll know exactly where I'm speaking, at what time, if you can attend, or if it's sold out, or if it's free, or if it's canceled, whatever. Also our Israel tours, also our future cruises, all of them are on the website. And of course, if God leads you to help the ministry, you can do that also through that website as well. So folks, there is a ceasefire. Iran basically surrendered. Who would imagine that after 12 days, when we pound Iran, dominate their skies, have its entire nuclear program gone, its entire ballistic missile program gone, and hundreds, almost 1,000 of their IRGC lunatics are dead. All of their leaders, all of their scientists, all gone. Launchers are gone. Unbelievable. Resounding victory in 12 days. So all of that, who would believe that Iran eventually will sit and ask for a ceasefire and say, please, no more. This is a complete surrender, and that's a total victory on Israel's side. Look, we could have gone longer and longer. I don't think they could have gone longer, that's for sure. I have about 12 minutes left, and I want to answer a few questions that you guys started asking. So Robin asked, if Israel can take control over large areas of Iran, why is it taking control over the Straits? Why is taking control over the Straits of Hormuz not an option? The Straits of Hormuz is international waters over there, and we don't need to take control over it. You know, there's enough countries all around that can, you know, take care of business. There's the American fleet, and there's some, China benefits from it a lot. China imports oil from Iran. I don't think it's our business. Our business is to make sure there's no nuclear program and no ballistic missile program, and to dismantle the axis of evil. Another thing, Anna Marie is asking, when will Netanyahu stop listening to Trump and do what is best for Israel? I think Netanyahu is not listening to Trump. If anything, Trump was listening to Netanyahu, and that's why Trump, against anything he said during the campaign, actually joined the war and eventually brought about a very soon ceasefire, and there is no more a nuclear threat from Iran. So I don't think it's the right way to describe the situation. Tanya is asking, is there any chance that Netanyahu still plans to take out Khamenei? Look, we could take out Khamenei, but then his son will succeed him. And then if he's out, then there's two other clerics that might succeed them. It's not a terrorist organization where you topple all of them and then there's another country that is actually saying, okay, we'll take it from there. This is a country. And because this is a country, let the people of that country do that job. I would love to see Khamenei gone. I think he is modern day Hitler. But it wasn't part of the objectives of the war. We would have loved to have done that, but I don't think, and based on what President Trump even said, this is not going to bring peace, but even extend the war. Eddie wrote, what should we expect next? Prophetically, Israel will flourish, prosper, and then something will happen that will cause America to no longer be able to stand by Israel, support Israel, and defend Israel. And then Russia will make its move. And then Iran will join Russia with Turkey. I don't know if it's going to happen in a year, in a month, or in 5 years. But I know it's going to happen because the Bible tells me so. And so far, the Bible has been proven way more accurate than even our this morning's newspaper. Danny, how should Christians view the war between Iran and Israel? Should we be excited the prophecy is being fulfilled, or sad due to how it's being fulfilled? Look, we're always sad that there is a war. Nobody's happy, but we're also rejoicing that evil is being eradicated. I want you to know that in Romans chapter 13, the Bible says that the government has a sword to execute judgment upon the evildoers. I think God is expecting governments to defend its own people, expecting government to fight evil. And I think that we should always strive to execute judgment upon the evildoers. So as Christians, you know, what you can do is pray, but you also have to pray in a biblical way. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Bless those who, you know, he will bless those who bless Israel. So you need to bless Israel. And you also need to make sure that God will defend Israel and give Israel the wisdom and the strength to execute judgment upon those evildoers that want to destroy it. Do you think Trump will eventually get Iran to sign the Abraham Accords? No. Abraham Accords will, it will expand. Maybe Saudi Arabia and Indonesia and other countries might join. Maybe even Syria and Lebanon. I'm not sure. All of them are option. But I don't think Iran is going to sign. I think Iran, again, Iran is going to attack Israel. It's going to join the axis that will come against Israel in probably even in the near future. What if Iran tries to deceive Israel and Trump at the negotiation table? How can Israel ensure Iran will not enrich uranium again? We can ensure Iran will not enrich uranium again by making sure that they don't build new enrichment facilities. Every centrifuge that they had is gone. We not only destroy their nuclear facilities where they enrich uranium with centrifuges, but we destroy the manufacturing assembly line of the centrifuges. So they cannot manufacture the centrifuges, and they cannot use those that they had. Iran cannot enrich uranium in the foreseeable future. And I don't think they're at the position to deceive anyone right now when it comes to the nuclear program. Paul is asking, how can the war be declared a victory when Iran still has the ability to attack Israel? Won't Iran regroup and be even more determined to eliminate Israel? First of all, if you want to destroy the last missile, it'll take about 10 years. What you need to do is make sure they're deterred, that they make sure that whatever they have, they are not going to ever use it, because they know exactly what's going to come upon them. Remember, they cannot manufacture new missiles. Most of their launchers are gone. And it's very easy to detect if they are going to launch rockets. I don't think they're bluffing anyone. I think that, look, as long as this regime is there, I don't think they'll ever change their ideology. I don't think they'll ever stop wanting to destroy Israel. I don't think so. But I also think that Israel is going to stay on top of it. We decided enough is enough. We're not going to sit and wait for you to do something. We're going to preemptively strike when needed. And this will be part of the new tactics in the Middle East, in this new Middle East. Claudia, is Trump turning his back now on Israel? No, not at all. Sometimes we don't like his style of doing things. Sometimes we don't like the way he says things. But overall, by far the most friendliest president ever. He gave Israel enough armament for the next 10 years, maybe. He's protecting us diplomatically in the UN. And he even sent his top weapon to finish the job in Iran. So I don't think he's going to turn against us after all that he did and the price he may have had to pay for it. I think he's deeply convinced that Israel is on the right side, Iran is on the wrong side. And I think he's deeply convinced that if there is a way to exercise power in order to bring about peace, don't sit and wait. Exercise power. Use the strength and make sure you bring peace through strength. Nancy, are Iran's proxies still active? The Houthis launched only 2 rockets during those 12 days. None came from the Iraqi or the militias over there. They're gone, basically. So folks, I'm happy to have answered all of your questions so far. I'm going to start my journey. The airport is still not open. I'm going to have to cross the border by land to another country in order to start my journey tomorrow. Pray for me. Pray for my team for the coming few weeks. I will be back with Pastor Barry for Medicine Beyond and Q&As and roundtables and more. But we're going to do it while traveling across America and Canada. So I will end up with the Aaronic blessing, not before I will remind you that there is also Israel, the Israel Decree, the New York Times bestseller that you really want to have in order to understand what is going on and the right of Israel over the land, and have biblical perspective of everything that is happening over the last 2 years. A great weapon for you to use in this war of information and propaganda and deception that is all around us. So let me bless you with the Aaronic blessing. Yevarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha, ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha, yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance towards you and give you his peace, his shalom. Hashem Yeshua. Amen. Pray for Pastor Barry. He lost his dear sister. She battled a very, very tough disease, and she is a believer. She is with the Lord right now. But we all send our love and condolences to him. And I'll see him in a few days, and we're going to be together later on throughout in the coming weeks. Thank you again. God bless you. Go to beholdisrael.org for more information about my upcoming tour, events that you may want to attend. Beholdisrael.org. That's the website. And if you are not yet following me on Telegram, that's the QR code. So down here, as you can see right here, is the QR code for the website. And up there, it's the QR code for my Telegram channel. Love you. God bless you. And shalom from Galilee.